So this is the Ohio Writers Guild. I am Kathy Binner, and I have an international academy called the Kathy Binner International Academy. And you can find all of the replays for the Ohio Writers Guild at kathybinner.com. So just go to kathybinner.com. I'll put that in the chat at some point as we go on with the evening. And you can just scroll down to the Ohio Writers Guild, and you'll be able to see the free replays of all of our conversations that we have here once a month with a new author. And also, we have just launched our mastermind, and Sandy is my co-host here for the free meetup, and she is also my co-host for the mastermind. And so she brings her expertise to the table. We were just chatting. I had just gone to a writer's conference this past weekend, and I was one of six nonfiction writers in the room. The rest were all fiction writers. So I was just telling Sandy that I now have to learn how to show and not tell. For those of you that are authors out there, you'll get that if you're a fiction writer. You know, you have to show the scene. And the best part of the writer's conference, and so I will say this before I move on, because then Sandy is going to tell us about a great writer's workshop that's coming as well. But the best part, the cost of admission was worth it to me. Right after lunch, we came back into the writers conference, and two publishers were there, and they sat up front in the hot seat, and they took all of the manuscript's first pages. Ooh. And folks all day long, they were allowed to leave the conference, go to the adjoining room, and they could pitch their book, their first page, to these two different publishers. But of course there wasn't time to hear everyone's pitch, because we had so many folks in the room. But after lunch, they took all the ones left over that didn't get to pitch. They shuffled them like a deck of cards, and they had a reader, like an audiobook reader, stand up at the front of the room next to these publishers. And he started reading the first page of each manuscript, and the publisher would raise their hand when they would have thrown it in the trash.
And then
they got to explain why.
Yeah.
Why they stopped reading at that point, and why that one wasn't even worth the rest of their time. Now, what we did learn is that these publishers get, you know, like 300 or more a day of submissions. And so they don't have time to really spend a lot of time. And so they explained some of the things that why they were stopped reading the manuscript. And so it really was insightful to all of us in the room. And one little side note, and this was the cutest thing. Finally, he kept reading on this one manuscript, and they didn't raise their hand. And he kept reading. And finally, he finished the first page, and he said, "I'm at the end of the page. You didn't raise your hand." They both said, "That one's good. We want to know more. We want that manuscript." And the girl ahead at the table ahead of me, and a couple over to the left under the table, I saw her go, "Yes." And I assumed that it was her manuscript. that they were interested in. So anyway, it was so enlightening to me, because I had never seen that in action before.
Yeah.
I'd never been in the room with publishers before.
Yeah.
And so now I get it, you know. Yeah. It was just a big aha moment for me. So yeah. I really appreciated that. And so hopefully, as everything unfolds here for Sandy, we'd talked briefly about maybe having some publishers at her writer's workshop, mm-hmm. but we'll see how that plays out. If not this year, maybe next. But anyway, that was worth the admission, just to see how the publishers were really receiving those manuscripts and what they were looking for. Mm-hmm. And I got firsthand examples of what showing not telling was all about.
Yeah.
And so of course the gal who, you know, was excited and said yes in front of me, hers had a perfect showing on that first page of what was going on. There was lots of action, there was lots of movement, and there was mystery like within the second sentence. I mean, it's like she had it all.
Yeah.
So anyway, so that was my experience. I'm excited to learn more. And so I'm going to let Sandy tell everyone what she is up to and all about her writer's workshop. So Sandy, yep. Over to you.
I am director of Into the Springs Writers Workshop in Yellow Springs, Ohio. It's somewhere between, it's around Dayton area, Yellow Springs, if you haven't heard of it. And I've been doing it for 5 years. And last year, Kathy, I asked if I could be on, and we kind of formed a friendship, and I've been talking about it ever since. And this year, and it's unique in the fact that it's one whole weekend, and I have all my registrants and my featured authors stay in the same room for the whole weekend. So the trick is to have featured authors, experts in the field, come from different backgrounds or genres, but yet be able to speak to a mixed audience of fiction and nonfiction and aspiring to multiple published. And this year, my two people are the amazing and world-known Jane Friedman, who knows just about everything there is to know about marketing and publishing. And with those credentials, and by all means, please look her up if you need to know more, or look up my website, and then you'll see her connected to that. And she could tell you what's going on in trends right now, what's happening, traditional versus independent publishing, all those things. And that's her topic. She is working with Jason Sanford, who is very well known in the science fiction world mostly, but his original beginnings were Southern literature. He's from Southern United States. And then he found out that to tell his best story, science fiction works well with him. But he knows PR. He has something that a lot of writers have used in recent years called Patreon, in which you promise your subscribers a chapter a month or a story a month, or for him, he does a lot with newsletter called Grapevine. And that's a fascinating thing to know, as well as he's also the master of short story. There was a British magazine that devoted that one issue to only his work. So he's, you know, talented, easy to talk to, and I've got them both working together. So they'll be there from Friday afternoon and talking about marketing trends. And then we move into a full Saturday, because I'm one of those that if I go to a conference and I pay enough for it, I want every second, I want to be exhausted when I go home, mentally and physically, because there's so much to do. And that's what I have it from at 6:45 a.m. The coffee will be, and hot tea for me, will be ready. And there's an optional writing activity from 7 to 8, and we get started at 9. And it's a full day until lunch, which is a 2-hour lunch break, but we're getting served. That's part of the price, getting served in the banquet hall. So you can sit next to any of the experts and chat more. Because writers, you know, except for Kathy, who goes up and meets the chief people every time, a lot of us are very quiet, and we wished we would have asked that question, or we don't feel strong enough to ask that question in front of everybody. Well, there are going to be a lot of moments in this weekend that you can ask Jane and Jason the question that you need. And there are other, and by all means, go to my website, Into the Springs, writersworkshop.com, to see more of that. But you're talking about the importance of the first page. And the first page is important. You sweat it out for 80,000, 50,000, 40,000 words. And the only thing that an agent or a publishing company is looking at is that first 250 words on the front page. And I used to have this service in which you pay a little extra and ask for which featured author you want and give them your first 5 pages, and they will do an in-text edit and then sit down for you for 10 minutes. But some of the featured guests were a little nervous about that. Everybody, you know, not everybody is always happy. Writing critiques is a very unique thing in itself. Well, Jane had said no, she didn't want to do it herself like that, but she loved the idea of how about if we do this, and here's what we're doing. For an afternoon, we will have folks volunteer to read their first page or first few lines. I don't even know if it takes a whole page. First few lines aloud, and Jason and Jane will make individual comments about how likely that piece would be accepted by an agent, an editor, a reader, and why not. And so that's how we're going to do it. And of course, like the publishers who mixed up the pages, certainly an author won't necessarily want to read their own work just to know, am I going to get crucified or am I going to get celebrated? So I have a couple actors who come in to do the open mic reading night, and they're going to read the pieces. So I got to work out the details. I'm probably sending those first few lines, how many lines, all that kind of stuff. So I'm making it where I want the writer to feel the most comfortable in getting the most out of a whole weekend. Because we go until you have a 2-hour break for dinner, but we start with evening activities that are optional, but they're there. And then we start again at 6:45 on Sunday. We end at noon. And a lot of good stuff going on. So please consider it. It's August 4th through the 6th in Yellow Springs, Ohio at the Mills Park Hotel, an incredible location in a very unique village that's worth it alone. So I've got all the good stuff, hotel, village center, and et cetera, et cetera. So thank you. Thank you, Kathy.
I am so excited. So you are going to do basically what they did at this writer's workshop where... Yeah, I did not have a submission because I'd never been to a writer's workshop before. And I was like, oh, I wish I would have brought, because I have started my nonfiction. I thought, I wish I would have brought my first page. So I'll bring it. Okay, I'm excited. Well, tonight we actually, and Sandy, go ahead and put your contact information in the chat for everyone thanks. That they can connect with you and get signed up for your writer's workshop. But tonight we have Eric Pearson. Now, Eric and I, we go back a ways. We met at another writer's convention, author's convention. And so I decided to host some of the authors at my bed and breakfast in my home in Kanawha, Winchester, Ohio. And Eric was one of the ones, and we made him the house mom. he was in charge of the other kids to make sure
they were probably half my age. Yeah, so that's true.
So anyway, he was in charge of the other kids to make sure they all got where they were supposed to be and all that good stuff. But anyway, like I said before, don't tell Mark, but I'm in love with Eric. And so he is here tonight. And so he's going to share. And now we have not actually chatted for a long time. And we've been saying that, why have we not gotten together to actually just chat and get caught up. So Mark and I, we've talked about, we're going to jump in Mark's airplane. He's a pilot, has a plane, and we might just fly down to Kentucky or make a day trip down there and drive down and visit Eric's world and see what he has going on down there with all of the chickens and the fences and all of that. So we're going to talk about all that tonight, but he is an innovative person who has lived a complete life having transitioned through numerous careers and during his journeys became an author as he searched for his life's purpose. He's a retired executive from Northrop Grumman Corporation, specializing in radar defense electronics, leadership development, and personnel management. So yeah, I tried to wrap my mind around those three things, how radar defense electronics, leadership development, and personnel management all fits in this same sentence. He holds a Bachelor of Science degree in education. He has a dual master's degree in engineering, and in retirement, he continues to pursue his writing. He's published 3 books between 2007 and 2022. And while he polishes up his children's books, of all things, which I think is, I wouldn't have guessed that, children's books, a leadership book titled The Common Sense Approach to Leadership, and his lifelong dream of publishing his novel titled Gone Fishing, The Bethany Beach Murders. Now he stays busy in addition to those literary pursuits. He substitutes almost daily at the local Elizabethtown, Kentucky independent schools in English, science, and engineering studies. And he says it's because of the lack of qualified teachers in the United States. So he's stepping up to the plate and making a difference for those kids. So Eric, you say I'm wearing all the hats. How about you? I mean, wow.
I want to know who wrote that bio for you. That's really good.
I know. You want to meet that guy, don't you?
I want to meet that woman. It had to be a lady. That was very sensitive.
So now, where did your personal journey begin when you decided you wanted to be an author? I mean, where does that start for you?
We all have we come from many different places, and we have, you know, we have some days something wakes us up. And so my wife and I, my second wife, we had, when she got pregnant in 1989, we ended up having her first child, my third. Ryan was born profoundly disabled. He had next to no brain, so he didn't have much going on there. It was a really devastating thing, but Kathy and I, we bonded quite well and took care of him for 14 years. The doctors in the hospitals and all, after he started having grand mal seizures at 2.5 months and we realized there was some severity there, we realized we had some real big issues that we had to deal with. We ended up getting to meet Dr. Ben Carson, you know, the famous children's brain surgeon, spent time with him. So it's just, you know, as you have met some very important people, you make the opportunity to meet some people and learn some things. And so Ryan, and then the hospital, they told us to just let him go, put him in an institution and let him die because he wouldn't live 2 years. Well, Ryan lived 14 years.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Every year our pediatric neurologist would say, now, Eric, I know Ryan's doing well, you're taking care of him, but someday he may just die in his sleep. And that's exactly what he did when he was 14 years old. He passed in his sleep. Very devastating for Kathy, very tough on her. At that time we have a daughter, Erica, who was 2 years younger than Ryan. So when he was 14, she was 12 when he passed. And Kathy went into deep depression for 3 years, which makes a lot of sense. Well, 2 weeks after his passing, I had to go back to work. And I went back to, so I had to go back to work and I had to go back to travel. And so I went back on travel and I was very, very tired and very, very, very reminiscent. And so my grieving process, I realized that I wrote a letter from Ryan to mom saying that, you know, and it's the beginning of the book, Ryan's Stories, that I wrote the story of his life, because I had written a letter saying, I'm sorry, I didn't get to say goodbye because Ryan passed on my watch. I had checked on him at 3:30 in the morning like I normally do. He was fine. And at 5:30 when I went to get him up, he had passed. And I had given that to Kathy when I got back from the travel. That was, instead of the poetry I wrote her that story, and didn't think about it. And 6 months later, I found it in the drawer and read it. And I just got the feeling that God wanted me to write Ryan's stories. You know, well, I'm not an English major. I had a lot of problems with school, but I decided I had to do that. And it took me quite a while to write that. So I wrote Ryan's Stories, God's Perfect Child. And the whole point there being that, well, Ryan not having much brain didn't do much. He was a joy. He loved to be held and stuff like that. But he didn't do all the things that boys normally do. He didn't wreck a car. He didn't mess around with the girls. He didn't get any Fs in school. So he was a perfect child in that sense. And so the message to everybody is to look at what and who you have around you, and be joyous about it. Celebrate instead of worry about the negativity. So maybe that's a lot of words about something that was very passionate, but if that had been the only book I wrote, I'd have been happy.
Wow. And so from what our conversation, and again, like I shared when we first opened up the meeting tonight, is that I know Eric personally. And so you actually give those books away, because I know you gave us a copy when we first met you. And so you don't sell those, am I correct? And you give those away?
I don't really sell. Well, yeah, we get into it. I don't really sell any books. No, I had back, that was the beginning, early days of self-publishing. And so, oh man, I tell you what's out there today. Thank God for authors today. It's available. I was out there at the beginning of the self-publishing. I think the people that were around then aren't even around today anymore. You couldn't get anything done. So I wrote the book. My sister did a great job. My sister did the front cover and she helped me edit it and the editing. I paid Arbor Books almost $15,000.
Wow.
To set up and print for me 1,000 copies. So I ended up spending $15 a book. And I thought I was going to sell it. I created my own LLC, the bottom three LLC. I was going to sell books. I published. You know, then I realized that that wasn't the purpose of it, and that wasn't what I wanted to do. So I give them away. I have about out of the 1,000 books, I have about 100 left. Now you can buy used books on Amazon for about $350 a piece, and that kind of pisses me off that someone can get $3.50 for a book I gave them, but at least someone else gets to read it.
Oh my God.
Well, that's true. That's true. So the purpose there is to help others maybe through their disappointment and their emotional loss. So it's a great contribution that you made there. And so I'm sorry about your loss with Ryan, because he sounds like he was very loved, and that was left a huge hole for you and your wife, Kathy. So, but let's segue over to your second book. So now you've written this first book. How much time was in between the first book and the second book?
Okay, Ryan died in 2004. I finished writing the book in the end of, and actually sent it to print in November of 2007, but they said put a release date of 2008 on it. So it says 2008, but it was really 2007. So that was 2007. So then I continued to work at Northrop Grumman, where I had a 14-hour day job, 5-6 days a week. So the next book I did not release until 2017. So it was 10 years later before I did the second. And of course, the whole process was totally different. I looked at a couple of different agencies. I went through one where you and I was, the best part about the money I spent for where I got the support for the second book was because I got to meet you all. And I won't tell anybody what the cheap rate is that you gave me to stay at your place, because it was phenomenal. But no, just meeting people was wonderful. But yeah, so it was 10 years later before I wrote the second book. I retired in 2014. So from 2014 to 2017, I spent 3 years writing that book.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. So what was your life like at that time? And because did you not retire like in between there? So by the time you wrote the second book, you were retired. Am I right?
Okay. A lot of the background for the second book was while I was working in El Segundo, California, away from home from 2011 to 2014. I retired in 2014, and we were transitioned between Maryland, where we grew up, where the kids grew up, and where I mostly live, to Kentucky, where I live now. And so there was a lot going on. So that was when I started putting it all together. So I retired in 2014.
Okay, so tell us about the second book. So what was it about?
So the second book is titled The People You Meet in First Class, When Chance Meetings Become Life-Changing Conversations. Wow. Now it's, so yeah, I did, I traveled an awful lot. So in the end, I never flew coach, but that wasn't the point. That wasn't the point of it. The point of the people you meet in first class, everybody you meet is first class. I was fortunate to be in first, but everybody in coach, everybody, it's all the same, because the stories are about those stories. So Ryan's stories are about 14 years of Ryan's life. The people meeting first class is about 40 years of, from the start back in 1974, when I took my first flight, which ended up being a cross country flight to go to a swim coaches conference when I was young and handsome and had hair down on my shoulders and coached kids in swimming. To when I retired in 2014, it was 40 years of flying and seeing people in airports, seeing people on planes, observing. See, the best lessons we can learn, and the best way to tell instead of show and tell and all, is about what we see and what we know. It's hard to make it up. So that became, I've talked about 40 years of me. So everybody say, 40 years of flying? You were a pilot? No, I wasn't a pilot. I was the guy that sat in the back, and I got to meet people and stuff like that. So being a, you know, being a shy person, it was hard to meet people, but those are what the stories are about.
Give us a couple of ideas on what's in the book. Give us what is your best story out of that book?
Oh my gosh, there are so many. It's 65,000 words. Now I didn't expect to have. I didn't prepare for that. Okay, so one of the people I keep in touch with, the American Gladiators, late 80s, early 90s. There were people competed against the gladiators on these strange things on TV. Well, I met a guy who was called, he was Thor 2. So he was the second Thor on American Gladiators. I was flying, we'd taken our grandchildren down to Disney World, and I was flying back from Orlando to Charlotte, and I got stuck in the middle seat, and I'm a pretty big guy. So I was in row six because I was didn't get first. They weren't first class seats in that plane. So I was in row six. And then so the window seat was open, and there was a really skinny little guy in the aisle seat. And I'm sitting in there, and I figured as soon as they're about to close the door, and I figured I'm going to move over in the window seat. Well, then all of a sudden this massive guy with 23 inch arms comes in and says, points to me and says, "That's my seat." So I find out he sits down and he's talking to his, you can tell he's talking to his 13-year-old daughter on the phone and all that. And so he gets off the phone. I lean over and look and said, "You know, looks to me like you go to the gym 2 or 3 days a week." And so he roars in laughter and found out he was a bodybuilder. He was a bodybuilder. He had just gotten a job doing Indiana Jones down there in Orlando. Wow. And he ministers to people in prisons and things like that. He's very religious and really, really kind of a cool guy. And I stay in touch with him. So his story is in the book, and everybody that I write a story that I include in the book, if I can find out who they are, they get a free copy of the book when I'm done. So he has a copy of the book.
I love that. Now, how long did it actually take you to write that one with all those stories and as big as the word count is? How long did it take you to finally write that one? We've got a lot of newbies that either are tuning in tonight or are going to listen to this on the replay. And it just seems so daunting to actually write a book. So how long did that one take you?
So as you go through, you have to focus. It depends if you're focused or not focused. When I wasn't focused, it took a really long time. Ryan's story, I had a purpose and a reason and a focus. And okay. that was my grieving process. That took 3 years. But the next one, that took 10 years. It took 10 years to put it all, well, it's 40 years compressed into 10 years. So that's 1 to 4, that's 25. So that's really not too bad, but that's remembering over a long period of time. Uh-huh. So that you can't rush. And that's something I put in, we talked about before, that I write when I feel like it, when I'm not feeling well, when I'm depressed or I don't hate to turn the TV on. So then I think about writing or something, but I'll wake up in the middle of the night and a story will hit me, then I'll turn the light on and I'll write it. So I think that, yeah, a lot of people will tell you when you're writing a book, schedule time. So you schedule your time, you sit down, you go, well, I'm not in the mood for this, but I've got to write something. So I write down stuff and you write down junk. So it's, it really depends. And the more I got into it, the fresher the things came back to my mind, it was easier to write.
Okay. Now, and this is about the time that, of course, Eric and I met, was when he was publishing that particular book. So that's how long I've known him since. I think it was 2017 is when
2017 was when I published it. Yes. So that's when.
Okay. And so that's when he would have been here at the guest house. And so that's
wonderful.
That's
guest house. Great people. I'm telling you, the murder that occurred there, I'm sure that there will be a book about it. I've been encouraging Kathy to write her her book since almost 6 years now. I've been encouraging her to write.
Good. Yes, yes. And I finally published my first, but it's not a fiction, but I did publish September of last year, which is my first book. But yeah, there's some mystery novels in there. So yes, so keep pressuring me, Eric.
And Mark has a book he's supposed to write. We talked about that and he hadn't even started, I'm sure.
Actually, he has turned on Google Docs with the little microphone and he's told a few of his stories into a Google Doc. And so that is now in writing. So he's not officially uploading that into any kind of a format yet, but he is collecting his stories. So
I want recognition. I hope he publishes it before I die.
Well, I'll pressure him a little bit too. So tell me about your current book and how did it come to be?
Okay, so now, what if I publish now? Well, so I'm always thinking about something. So the book I published in 2022 is called What's Cooking? Feeding the Heart and Soul, One Meal at a Time. The last 3 years I worked for Northrop Grumman Radar Defense Electronics. I was essentially a special envoy, but for the big Dark Star, the stealth bomber program, which is actually that thing can fly itself. It's unbelievable. So I was out in California, so I spent a lot of time out there, and I'm not a partier. I cook, so I don't go out to eat. So I did a lot of cooking for myself and people who worked at the hotel, the Residence Inn in El Segundo.
Wow.
So then I said, well, shoot, I'm a writer now. Well, I thought I was a writer. So I said, why don't I start writing my stories down? Because I had to decide that was the time to say, start organize yourself before you forget it. So I started writing the stories down in no shape or form. And so I started taking pictures of the food, which I'd never done before. I takes a picture of the food I made and started thinking about what I did and talking to the people who appreciate what I ate. So I started writing stories about the people I met through the food I made and shared with people. I think that it's all about sharing. It's not about what a great cook and chef I am, which I really am, but that's a different story. But it was about the people involved, because nonfiction is nonfiction, as what you said at the beginning, telling stories, showing is different than telling. Mm-hmm. I'm a good storyteller, so. I'd already took the advice on the genre of my mystery novel. That's a different genre. So I started writing all the stories down. And so that was probably in about 2013, I started writing those down, retired in 2014. And by 2017, I had finished writing the book, completely self-edited myself. By that point, I had grown so much that I actually became an artist in English literature, and I was able to do all of that myself. And it was hard for me to stop writing, though, because every time I would finish a story, I would think of another one. And so it was really hard to know when to stop. So I finally stopped and said, well, let's got to get this thing published. So I published that one in 2022.
All right. And so that one again is called What's Cooking? And what's the rest of your title on that one?
Feeding the Heart and Soul, One Meal at a Time. It's about the food, but it's really about the people you meet. I mean, the world revolves around people, not the food. Mm-hmm.
And I was very honored. Eric asked me to write his foreword for that one. And so I was able to contribute in that way. So I was very honored to be a part of that experience as well. So now, have you written anything since then?
Well, I've been dabbling for years. So I wrote a leadership book called A Common Sense Approach to Leadership while I was still working in Northrop Grumman. I was creating leadership programs, and I've rewritten it twice, but I never published it.
Okay.
I have, and I don't know. I may or may not do that. I mean, it actually is relevant. But then when I went to look at it, I saw that. Everybody's publishing leadership books. Well, so it's never going to sell. Of course, my whole issue was, my point was to write a book that was about a 100 pages only, because the common sense shouldn't take you long. So the whole book ended up with a couple of appendices, ended up 139 pages. Wow. And actually, it's really, really good. I just don't know why I haven't done it. But I moved on with the rest of my life, so I didn't do that. I have written three short children's books. I had one of my many things I've done in life. I was a biology teacher, and I majored in science in college and in education. So I know a lot about biology and zoology and all that. So I wrote three little books about nature and animals and stuff, but I need to find an artist that's willing to, I will give someone who can draw characters, I'll give them top billing in the book, but I guarantee you won't make any money. Because you just don't make it. So that's where I can't find somebody. And so I've done that. And so in the one that I've got one book that's called Oliver Travels. Oliver is a California seagull who travels wherever the favorable winds blow. But I wrote four real good chapters on that one, but I never got back to that because then I got involved in, I became retired and started playing golf. So that's put on hold.
So tell us, what is a day look like for you there where you are? Because now that you're retired, you'd mentioned early on when we first came onto the call that you were, you know, depending on the weather, you were going to be out building chicken coops and fences. So what is it that you're doing? And you ended up buying another house and moving. And so what are you doing there? What's it all about?
Well, I didn't move, but I was supposed to.
Okay.
So I'm involved in two mortgages.
Oh, okay.
So the local independent schools in town. So a normal day, Monday through Friday, normally is during the school year. I get up at six. I wait at six. If I don't have a call ahead of time, it's 6 o'clock in the morning. I get a call almost every day. The substitute either middle school or the high school. So at 6:45, I get up, I go to school and I substitute. Sometimes it's a daily sub, sometimes it's long-term sub, which can be anywhere from 3 to 5 months. And I get a whole $125 a day with a dual master's degree from Johns Hopkins University. So I'm paid really well. So I have to do that because I'm paid really well. And yeah. So then I can go up to the farm, which is a half a mile away, and I feed the horses in the evening and I work on the farm a little bit. So Monday through Friday, I don't spend a lot of time for them, but Saturday, Sunday, I spend all day long building horse stalls in one of the barns, and the other barn I'm building chicken coops and duck coops. And I'm putting fences in and arenas in, and I'm going to build walking paths and flower gardens and fruit trees that are in there, honeybees, and I'm going to offer to all the local school systems the opportunity to come out and tour the facilities, and I'll mark all the trees, what kind of trees they are, and do free education for the elementary, middle, and high schools. Nice. in Kentucky.
Good.
That's awesome. I love all of that. And so that's how you're keeping your days busy as well. Now, you would be interested in speaking to groups or conferences on your topics?
I love speaking on any topic. I mean, you know, leadership was a real big part of my career. People and education are important to me. I'm worried about the public education in this country. Respect and stuff to the schools. I give the kids lectures every day, 10 minutes before I give them their assignment, even though I'm a substitute. I enjoy doing that. I always have. I've been involved in many university organizations. I've been involved in the American Society for Engineering Education and presented in many national conferences. I like doing that. And I like going and talking. I like to share. As we get older, I think I'll live longer. I'll live longer if I continue to give to other people. Mm-hmm. And that's my charter. That's my God-given gift to share with people. Now, I'm not as talkative as you two are. I'm not really good about you two. I was amazed at listening to both of you in the introduction. I was afraid I wasn't going to have anything to say. You two do a really good job.
Well, thank you for that. But no, you have a lot to say. I am just so excited to see your path. And I can't wait to see those children's books get out there, because again, your message is important. And whatever the story is, obviously, it's a good story for the kids. You've got a heart for the kids. I can tell that the elementary, the middle school and the high school kids. And if it does your heart any good at all, just know that when I was at this writers conference, this workshop over the weekend, there was a lot of young folks in the room. And I was very happy to see that. I mean, I was probably one of the oldest ones in the room, but there was a lot of young people in the room that are aspiring authors. And so that did my heart good to see them there.
So nobody over 40 there, huh?
Yeah, right. So, Sandy, do you have any questions for Eric?
Oh, I like all that you're talking about. You know, when you talk about showing, not telling, when you're doing a children's book, definitely showing is key. Maybe for the good of some parents, you have a young child who will fall asleep in no time. But that's not what you want them to do with your book. But no, how do you find the difference between the different audiences that you write for? Like the audiences for Ryan's story, the audiences for your second book of a collection of, airport seat stories. I like that. And children's, aimed at children's audiences. How do you see the difference between them?
Well, okay. So that's an on-the-spot question, because I never thought about that. But you're absolutely right. And I guess in the back of my mind, I always had it, because you're absolutely right. The audiences are different. And if you don't write with your audience in mind, so I guess mm-hmm. I did anyway.
Yeah.
Then you're not going to get the message across. Yeah. Right. Because even though my first three books were nonfiction, they're targeted towards different people.
Yeah.
The people you meet in first class is about experiences. The cooking's about, well, it's about meeting people, but it's about cooking and food and stuff like that. Ryan's stories and it was about helping people through their own disasters and own personal losses.
Mm-hmm.
That will always be my most favorite book. I didn't believe I could do it, and it's so heartfelt, and I miss Ryan every day, no matter what. So I don't know who my audience is for the murder mystery novel, children's books. I know who they are. And that's why I'm going to make those more like booklets. There's going to be, instead of 278 pages and 178 pictures in my cooking book, that's not going to be more than 15 to 20 pages. And So I've got to stop myself from writing a lot sooner. So you're right. We have to think about the audience is most important. Who are we in? It's because if we don't know who we're going to sell the book to, we'll never sell a book. That's a good question.
Yeah. No. And some of it you need to keep in mind, but it can't necessarily control what you write. You know, that you got to write a good story. And sometimes the audience is just the language level that you use, or some of the scenes, how graphic you may or may not tell them. But yeah, audiences. And that's what makes my job as selecting the staff for the workshop a little easier, because I'm asking featured authors from different genres to talk to the same people all weekend who come from different genres and levels. And today, at one point in time, you could only stick in one genre. Like, for example, and this isn't the case anymore, but Stephen King needed to be the horror writer. And that's all. Even his publisher says, nope, we need to keep you in horror. We don't want to see your name on something that not in the same genre. But anymore, it doesn't matter. And those authors got away with it because they would just change their name for a different genre. And it's the same with audience. You know, J.K. Rowling, who did the Harry Potter books, she broke barriers, because she came out with a book that was called Young Adult. So that meant that by 16, her audience wasn't interested in her book because they had grown up. And you could imagine the publishing company's thrill when it became a hit in every age group. Mm-hmm. So even that today, your mystery, you that audience, sure, needs to be uppermost as you write, but yet it's possible to speak across the different age readership. So it's just amazing the barriers that once were up are not up anymore, which gives you a lot of leeway and freedom. But that audience does, it helps in the writing process if you know who's out there and telling them the best story, because the reader cannot bounce out of your story or get bored. You get bored by page 30, chances are somebody, you know, it's word of mouth is going to get out there. So good luck. That's a real challenge that you have in the age groups. They're mm-hmm. not like, oh, they're for like 15-year-olds and then my next book's for about 18-year-olds. You're really going across the spectrum, and that's good, because your experiences are across the spectrum too, in your personal life and in your dealings, in your occupations.
Sandy, thank you for that. I want to ask Eric, how do you lay out your books? Do you have a system in place? I mean, do you follow a prescribed plan? You know, have you learned from, you know, like when you were an Author Academy Elite, where that's how we met. Do you have a place or a plan on how you lay your books out? Is there an outline? How do you start?
No, yes. I didn't originally, because it was a passionate experience. And I learned that if I was going to do it, I had to do it right. And I learned from others and from paying others to teach me what I think I already knew, that you have to have a plan. If you don't have a plan, it doesn't matter. Always. So we learn in leadership, always make a plan. The fact that you execute the plan is less important than making the plan. So if you're so dedicated, so if you're so strict with yourself that you have to follow the plan, you'll never get there. But make the plan, try to follow the plan, and then deviate when possible. So you have to decide, what's my genre? Who is my audience? Where am I going? What do I want to tell them? Do I have anything to share? Mm-hmm. Never think about, am I ever going to sell a book? Because then you'll never write it. And so you lay out your thoughts and your ideas. And so that's what I do. And I lay out what, so the current book, the mystery book that I'm writing, which is I've been dreaming about for 15 years, I have laid out a general outline. Because okay. For 15 years, I know from day one who the heroine is. And I chose a heroine 15 years ago, not a hero. So I was in the women's lib long ago. This is going to be my granddaughter. So I knew the ending of the book, and I knew, and so for 15 years I've been developing mine what it is. So I had developed the time sequence. In a mystery novel like that, when you write that non. When you're writing fiction like that, you don't want to give away the story too early, but you don't want to get to the end of the book and people say, well, how did that happen? You want them to be able to guess along the way, but guess wrong. And in the end, when they get the answer, which they guessed wrong, say, ah, of course, I should have realized that. So absolutely, even something simple, like a children, you have to lay it out. You have to say, well, what is my message? If you don't know what your message is, they won't read past page 3. They won't read. I used to, when I go on vacation, I'd read a book a day for 10 days because I'd love to read. And the next day I would forget what the book was about. But I've read a lot of books where I've read the first 30 pages and put the book down and not read because it didn't interest me. It didn't catch me. So you have to plan that. So you have to set up. So you set the book up in the front. If that beginning of that book, the dedication, the foreword. So you got to get a right person like Kathy Binner here to write your foreword to say, this is a great guy. You got to read what he's got. He's fantastic. He's done a lot of good things. And I didn't pay you $5 for that. So, but then you have to lay it out. Said so that first message we talked. You mentioned that earlier. That first message, that first page is critically important. Mm-hmm. And so you got to say, here's what you're going to hear. And then you lay it out. Then you lay it out. You can always go back and change it because I have so the what's cooking. I rearranged things in the world. I didn't know when I was going to end the book. And then I went on vacation to the Grand Canyon, and I stopped in Seligman, Arizona, just on a whim, and ended up at the Roadkill Cafe on old Route 66, and said that day was an accident. And that day said, it's time to finish the book. So the end of my cooking book is about the Roadkill Cafe in Seligman, Arizona. And I got to meet the owners of the company, and their whole story, their whole family life is in that book, because that's what it's all about. Now they don't sell Roadkill. They just name all their dishes after what you would say Roadkill, like possum fat grease or something. No, but so you have to be organized. If you're not organized, you'll never know when you're done. And if you're not a good editor, get an editor, mm-hmm. or become a good editor. Because if people find 6 misspelled words in the first 5 pages, they'll stop reading, even though the message is good. Yes. I mean, I've had people, and I've read where famous authors are put in the back in the epilogue of their book. They'll say, if you find something wrong with this book, keep it to yourself. I don't care. So, but it's got to be readable.
Yeah.
Because everybody's a critic. They paid $3.99 for a book online, and they think they can tell you how you fix this. You got to be careful with that.
Yeah. No, I agree. Now, I always struggle with, you know, when I'm writing, an educational piece, I don't have a problem with where I'm going, what my message is, and knowing when I'm done. But I haven't quite wrapped my mind around that as a fiction writer. So, it's like, how do I put that into practice when I'm writing fiction? So that's where I'm struggling. And some of our listeners might be struggling with that as well.
Well, you're right. You know where you're going. You write so that's what I've done. I wrote the beginning of my book. I wrote the introduction. I wrote the characters. Then I wrote the ending of the book. Now what I've got is probably 5-10 more years of filling in between, because it's got to be really specific.
Okay.
So I'm going to show them how we get to where we're going. I've got to make them see the beach, the boardwalk in Bethany Beach. Understand who the chief of police is, understand what a surf fisherman is, understand what the bait shops are, and all that kind of stuff in between. But I know the beginning, I know the end, and you fill in the middle. If you don't know where you're going, you'll never know when to stop, which is the problem I had with the cookbook. I got lucky and didn't know when to ever stop, or I'd never printed it.
Yeah.
And you ended up, when it did end, you knew. It was the right time at the right place.
I knew it was the right time at the right place. Yes.
Yeah. I love that. So when you meet folks, how do you share that you're an author?
Nice question.
Yeah. How do you do that? How do you let folks know that you're an author when you first meet them? When somebody says, well, what is it that you do?
That's really interesting, because I'm actually shy about that. Because I'm not trying to sell books. But if you know, if when the group of people, then there's the instance when one of my books I think could help someone, I mention it and say, I might have a book you'd like, and I give them one. So that's not good. I'm not a good salesman. But since I'm teaching school, the middle school and high school, I'm telling you, these kids are lost. Public school, private school, they're lost. So as I say, the ones I go into regular, I lecture them for 5-10 minutes before about, well, what'd you do over the weekend and stuff? And then when the appropriate time I mention that, well, you know, I've done a lot of things in my life and I've written some books. Are there anybody here thinking about writing a book? You know, because I think anybody can write a book. Mm-hmm. So I talk to the kids, so I mention it. And then the point of doing that is not to mention this so they'll buy my book. The point is to mention this so that they'll realize that Mr. Pearson is somebody. He's somebody you need to learn to respect and have respect for, so that they learn to respect other people. It's not about me. Learn to respect their parents, learn to respect other people, learn to respect themselves. That's what the lecture is all about, respect and all. And so then they'll go look up the book and say, oh my gosh, he's an author. Well, then they realize that to them, somebody special who's a published author is teaching me in school, and maybe I ought to listen. And I have seen, so in the last 5 years, I have seen numerous kids that I think were in trouble have changed. Not enough, because not enough of them to satisfy me, but I've seen kids change. And I've seen, I had a kid last year who I met him in the seventh grade, and now he's in the 10th grade. And last year he started writing his own book and asked me to read his first three chapters.
Good, good.
I mean, that's what it's all about. And I didn't charge him. And actually he was a pretty good writer.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that. So what's next, Eric? What's next for you?
Well, I guess it's the, well, I don't, so I figure that I will eventually publish the murder mystery book. So I probably won't finish it for 10 years to make sure I live till at least 83. But building on the farm and doing all that, I think takes a forefront of all the golf. I do like to play golf, but I don't play golf as much as I used to. I'm going to continue to teach the school and I'm going to make the farm such that it's an educational environment. And I think that's my purpose, to continue to serve forever. But I'm going to continue to write. Do I publish? I don't know. But self-publishing is the way to go, because you can do it fairly cheaply. If you follow the right methods, you can buy your own. I've got 10 things. I bought 10 things at once instead of one, so I could just lift my books myself. But you need a lot of help and support. Don't do it solely by yourself unless you've done all the background work that I've done and we've done. And if you enlist professionals, don't listen to them completely. Let them guide you, but they don't know the way to do it your way. Mm-hmm.
That's all great advice. Now, Sandy and I, we just talked in our mastermind just a couple of sessions ago, all of the different ways that one can get published. So if anyone is interested in hearing that, get in touch with me or with Sandy and we can get you a copy of that if you want to hear all of the different ways you can get published. Because you have traditional publishing on one end, and then you have self-publishing clear on the other end, and then you have a million and one hybrids in the middle. And it's so hard to know who is a real publisher. I mean, you know, you have the independents, you have the vanity publishers, there's just a million and one independents or hybrids throughout that whole spectrum. And it's so hard to know. And when you go online and you search or Google any of that, they all are trying to present themselves as a traditional publisher. And if you really don't know how to define traditional publisher, and one of the best ways to define that is, are they charging you or are they giving, are they paying you or are they charging you? So that's the big question to ask yourself.
Yeah.
Eric, did you have a comment?
That's really true. Cause I got a deposit last week in my checking account for selling an online book.
Mm-hmm.
I got 30 cents.
Yeah.
You have to manage your expectations.
Yeah, there you go.
There's a lot of middleman involvement in there and giving away so on the paperback and hard copy, you're giving away 45 to 55%. On top, then you also pay for the printing of the book. Mm-hmm. So unless you're a J.K. Rowling or a Dean Koontz or a Hillary Clinton or someone who's in the know, you're not going to get upfront money. So I suggest people manage your expectations, but write, print, publish. I think it's really cool. I don't care if I don't make a dime. Yeah, I do, but it's out there. After I'm long gone, my grandchildren will be able to point to, look, our grandfather wrote and published books. So I do it for different reasons than others, but I think that if you manage your own expectations and you search and ask experts such as you two, the guidance for it, you'll get proper guidance rather than going to a published company and have them tell you what they can do for you.
Mm-hmm.
And I encourage all of our listeners to sign up for some of these writers' workshops and, yes. and some of the writers' conferences, because oftentimes, even if you're paying a fee to attend those, you're getting such valuable information. There is so much that they give during those sessions that there's no way that you can search that out all on your own independently, individually. You'd pay a lot more than going to a writer's conference or a writer's workshop to get that information. So sign up for some of those. You know, take a weekend or two out of each year and educate yourself. And mm-hmm. so I think not only will you be more inclined to make the right choice as to how you want to get published, but it's also going to be such an inspiration when you're in a room full of writers. Yeah. And so I encourage everyone to do that, to surround yourself with folks that are writing and join writers groups. Yes.
It's a great vacation and hanging out with like-minded people. You will learn and gain more from people who are willing to share, because maybe some of them don't know they're sharing, but sharing than paying someone to do that. I think that the conferences, the weekends, the writing weekends, I think those are fantastic. Even if you're a novice, that gets you started. That gets you pumped up and saying, well, they've convinced me I can do this. And you're not asking for money to publish it. You're just sharing with them, and you share with other people, and sharing your own sorrows and regrets and desires worked really well. I think what you said there was really good.
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, I came home from my writers' conference this last weekend, and I wanted to start writing my fiction. I was definitely pumped up and inspired and I saw examples firsthand, and it was really inspirational for me to get busy. So Eric, just so you know, I did start writing my outline. So I still don't know where my gal is. I've heard a lot of fiction writers say that once they get their main character, underway, that the main character kind of just takes the book over
Oh, yes.
And so I'm not sure. I'm not sure where she's going to end up in my mystery. But anyway, I started writing the outline, and ideas started coming that I hadn't thought of before. So now I'm not sure which direction she's going to go just yet. Yeah. So I'm as much in the dark for the mystery as everyone else is at this point.
That's going to be interesting.
That could be a good thing.
Yes, that's a very good thing. So Eric, folks can connect with you. And they can, I think this is your email. It's erictthebottom3.com. Is that correct?
Eric@thebottom3.com. Yes.
Okay. It's Eric at, okay.
@thebottom3.com. Right.
Let me make sure I have that correct there. Okay. I put that in the chat. Make sure that is what it's supposed to say there. So connect with Eric and get copies of his books. Yes. Now, Eric, do you have a website with your books?
No, I'm too busy helping everybody else to do a website.
All right, we'll have to get together. I can get you a website in a day.
Yep.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
Yep,
We'll have to get together. You got to fly into the local E-town. I'm only 3 miles from the little airport.
I know.
737s can fly into our airport.
Yeah, well, Mark can't fly one of those, but
but his plane will fit in there.
Oh yeah, his plane will fit in there for sure. So yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll definitely have to get together. Any questions or comments from our audience? We still have some folks in the audience. Put your question in the chat if you have any questions or comments for Eric. This has been a great conversation, Eric. It's so good seeing you.
Oh, always.
I don't see any questions coming in. Just wanted to wait a second, make sure.
Well, good. We gave them all the answers ahead of time. We anticipated well.
Yes.
They're prepared now.
So connect with me, kathybinner.com. Scroll down and you will find the Ohio Writers Guild. Now we have a Facebook group. We have a meetup group on meetup.com. So join the group. It doesn't cost anything to join the group. Yeah. Doesn't cost anything to tap in on our free monthly interview like you did tonight. But then if you're interested and you want to go further with the mastermind, just tap through at kathybinner.com and you can get all the information to join the mastermind if you want to do that. And so connect with Sandy because she has the Writers Workshop coming up, Into the Springs Writers Workshop, in August 4th through the 6th at the Mills Park Hotel in Yellow Springs. So make sure that you connect with her. And again, if you're thinking about being a writer, come to some of these writers workshops and these writers weekends. They're invaluable. And I can't wait. I can't, now that I've been to one, I can't wait. And then connect with Eric and pick up a copy of his book and follow Eric, and I'll get busy with Eric and see if we can't get him a website. So
thank you.
Yes, right. you need something out into that universe for people to glom onto when they hear about you and they want to know more before they have a chance to meet you in person. So that's important.
Yep, I love it.
I hope you do. It's been a pleasure, Eric. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you all very much.
All right. We'll see everyone next month. So we're here every month on a Tuesday night, 6 o'clock. So we'll see you next time.
Yep. Thank you.
Stay well. Okay. Write well.
Bye.
Bye. Take care, Eric. Take care of your chickens.
Cluck, cluck, cluck.